Welcome back to the Teaching in Tech podcast for season two with Alan and Chad, where we continue to explore everything related to teaching, learning, and technology integration. Working with teachers, we see amazing things happening in classrooms every day.
In each episode, we'll detail teaching strategies and technology integration ideas that are working. Also, special guests will join us to share strategies that have been successful with students.
Well, welcome back for another episode of Teaching in Tech with Alan and Chad. And in this episode, we are going to get into something that will be useful for teachers at this time of the year when everybody is starting to feel a little bit worn down and time is at a premium. We're going to be talking about productivity and organization today.
Yeah, I just want to highlight it's never too late to learn something new, right? As we started to explore some of the stuff that we want to talk about today, Chad and I even come across some like new aha moments, right? And it's not something that'll feel overwhelming to add on to your plate. It actually is quickly implemented and stuff that you can pull back on.
Yeah, schedules, you know, get busier and busier with all the different things that teachers have going on during the school day. Any time that you can save on the clerical and the administrative side of your tasks, you can shift that over and put more into the teaching and the planning. And in that way, you know, really spend more time focusing on the main thing that you're there to do. You know, most teachers, it's funny the way that the classroom goes, especially when you get bogged down in grading. Most teachers really could use an administrative assistant to keep them going with all the things they have going on.
Oh, especially at this point of the year, right? The pressure's on to kind of wrap up some of the curriculum in order to prepare for those state tests. You talk about grading, crunch time between 9 weeks. You're kind of hitting that end of year fatigue. It's the struggle is real.
So let's get into the first strategy as far as things that teachers can do in terms of organization. And one thing that really has become part of all of our professional lives, at least in some form, for our district being a Google district, it's your Google Calendar. So let's talk a little bit about some ways that teachers can maybe become a little bit more organized, or and not necessarily organized, but a little more efficient in how they're using their Google Calendar.
Yeah, you know, when we first brought on Google, we've watched it transform over the last decade. But one of the biggest tools, I mean, I use is the calendar. You know, there's just so many capabilities, but from a teaching standpoint, administrative standpoint, any of those, the ability to post things through your calendar and share it with others. I'm thinking classroom, right? If I'm a teacher and I'm sharing out office hours with students, scheduling things with parents, sending out updates in regards to grades that may be due for different assignments, keeping yourself on task. The other one that we kind of talked about today, Chad, was the task feature. So if you're in Google Calendar, you can actually toggle between your calendar and what's called tasks. And under there, go ahead.
It's interesting because, you know, tasks is something that's been available in both Calendar and Gmail for a while. And I don't really know of too many people that use it, but as we were getting into that, it definitely looks like something I'm going to be interested in kind of adding some things to, because I've kind of always had a little bit of a hybrid system of, you know, all of my digital appointments and things that I have going on. But then if you ever look at my desk, there's typically either a notepad or post-it notes sitting out, you know, with lists of things going on there. And really for me, anytime I can eliminate paper, that's something that I'm always looking to do. So I really like the idea of being able to just toggle over and have a list of current tasks. And then when you're done with those, you know, check them off or delete them.
Absolutely. It's funny you say that. Mine's the exact same way. I have my calendar here, but I jot down with, you know, my check boxes on paper, exactly what I'm going to do. There's something satisfying about checking off a box. But what's great about this is it erases from your list. So when it's done, it takes it off of your to-do, and then it shows under completed.
So I'd be interested, like, for yourself as a man of influence and power, you probably have a much more jam-packed calendar than what I do. What, you know, how many different calendars do you usually have open and running at the same time?
So just normally I have two open at full time, and then I've probably got about 14 on my side that I toggle between. And it's just different things, BLT, DLT, different people throughout the district. Yep. But really that's just to layer that, right? And I thought the task thing is, as we were kind of toying with that, I'm like, holy smokes. You know, most of these I only start opening because I get an email. So I get an email that triggers, oh, I need to look at this calendar to coordinate.
Right.
But from email, you can actually create a task from an email that you receive.
Yep. Yeah, it's really nice when you look at those right along the top where you have in Gmail, where you can mark your emails as read or unread, where you can go through and, you know, delete or mark something as important. You know, you have your little checkbox circle with a check mark and a plus there. You, as you're saying, you can add that email right to your tasks. And by doing that, if there's a specific email that you get that, you know, gives you something that you're going to have to get accomplished, instead of having to create your own calendar event, you can just kick that right over to your tasks. And, you know, from there, you're ready to go. You know, my calendar is a little bit different just from the standpoint, being that a lot of what I do is more emergency response and triage. Sometimes I have a calendar that would look somewhat wide open. But, you know, I'm usually spending most of the day responding to problems and issues that go on throughout the building. And so then my calendar events become really important just because if it's a really hectic day and there's a lot of things breaking down and you know, teachers needing help, that way I don't miss any appointments that I might have or things that I have that are coming up.
And heck, the task list would almost be even better for you, where you're not looking so much at what you have planned ahead. It's all those requests that come in like, hey, I need you now. You can create your task list and then continue to check off so you don't lose track of somebody.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, the thing that to me is interesting, I think it would really benefit teachers when you think about the different calendars that they would need. It'd be a little bit different than an instructional specialist or a principal. And so being able to not only have their personal calendar, but then their Google Classrooms where they can they can kind of sync those calendars in and make sure that they've got a clear picture of assignments coming due and you know, things of that nature. You know, the teacher has a little bit different way that they're going to lay out and utilize that calendar. And everybody's got a little bit different system that's going to work best for them in terms of keeping their events organized. But one thing I think that, you know, teachers really could benefit the students in terms of organization is spending a little more time, you know, with the Google Classroom calendar. Now, I know for me, when I was in the classroom, I thought I did a pretty good job of developing good assignments in Google Classroom that had all the materials needed where someone could use those independently. But mostly my Google Classroom calendars, you know, those were really just based on the assignments that were created, you know, where it automatically creates then a calendar event to go with that, where the students can check it. And then that obviously is imported into the to-do list that's built into Google Classroom. But what I think would really be an interesting concept is if teachers took a little bit more of a opportunity to teach kids how to use Google Calendar and then use that calendar really as an important part of class, where if students are asking, you know, about due dates and things that are coming up, if you're constantly referring them back to that calendar, you know, that's going to help, you know, with them in terms of just building those skills, training them so that they're ready to go. And, you know, they start to build, because those organization skills aren't just going to happen naturally. I mean, kids do get a little bit, as they get older, they do get a little bit more ability to handle, you know, responsibilities, but to be able to become organized, there really is a certain amount of skill that has to be built there.
Yeah. And the first thing when you're talking about kind of planning out and using those dates and getting kids to reference that, I think of like a course syllabus.
Yeah.
Right. When you talk about post-secondary, they hand you a syllabus that said, these are the dates. This is what you're learning when you're learning it. This is the test when you're taking it. Right. And we in high schools a little bit, we have to adapt a little bit more. But even saying generally, right, by the end of this 9 weeks, by the end of this week, by these dates, we're doing these. And even if it's just a few weeks out that you're planning it, getting kids to recognize that they are accountable for specific timelines.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So as we continue this nonstop thrill ride, we've already talked about Google Calendar. Let's talk a little bit about some things that you can do in Gmail to increase your productivity and your organization. And I just, before we get into a couple of these ideas, I do have to ask you, you know, when it comes to your inbox, your professional life is all kind of like laid out in there. Are you one of those people that can't stand to have unread emails and is constantly deleting and cleaning up the inbox? Or are you one of those big picture people that never deletes an email?
Well, kind of both. I never delete an email, but I never keep it in my inbox. So I've got about, you know, how nth number amount of folders that cycle through each year, but they move, right? You organize that way. And the only reason for that is there's always something that comes up that you have to reference something you would have deleted.
Yep. So I'm a little bit different than you. I have some different inboxes set up. I do have some labels set up and filters where some things go skip and move right through my primary inbox. But I, along with you, I do not delete emails. I've tried to convince some others, and really I'm not a very good salesman. I can't convince those who get stressed out by unread emails and a number that shows up on the side by their inbox, a big number. But to me, because in a Google Workspace account in an educational, setting, really you have unlimited storage space. So you're never going to run out of storage. You're not going to fill it up. And I think it's a great record. If I keep every single email communication that I ever had, it's not really a cover your behind type thing, but it's more of a, hey, I know I had a conversation about this and I can't quite remember, and by searching at the top using the search bar, I can put in enough different terms, relating to the concept that I can usually find it pretty quickly.
Yeah, no, I struggle with Google. It's just these massive corporations, right? But they're just so good at what they do. And Google is so intuitive in that regard. When you go to search something and it's just a reference of, it talked about this, and I can find a needle in a haystack because of those abilities.
Much faster than just manually searching for it and looking for it.
Absolutely.
And you know that, as we've talked about too, that it's really kind of similar to what you're seeing in Google Drive, where it suggests certain files to you that you've worked with recently, depending on who you're collaborating with, where it suggests things to you. And even you're noticing this in Gmail, like you're getting these, what they call nudges, where if there's an email you haven't responded to or followed up on, it will give you a nudge and move that email back to the top of your inbox saying, hey, it's been 5 days. Do you want to respond to this?
Yeah.
You know, those are with all the buzz on generative AI. I mean, that's just another example of AI sorting out emails that based on a set of criteria and the way that the algorithms are set up, that it's reminding you of emails that you maybe didn't respond to, or it's noticed that you haven't interacted with like you normally would. So let's get into a few things that people can consider as far as organizing and cleaning up and getting their Gmail to the point where it's the most productive that it can be for them. One of the things that I do, and I'm not sure if you use this or not, but you can actually set up your Gmail to have different inboxes. So I think there's up to 5 total that you can use, but I basically use 3. I have my primary inbox, I have one for what's called promotions, and then I have a third for forums. So basically, as the emails come to my account, if it's just to me, it's going in the primary inbox. If it's coming from one of the many ed tech companies that I've interacted with over time, where it's an ad that's coming to me, it goes into promotions. And then anything that is a form or basically an email that's been sent to me as part of a group, it drops into the forum. So some of the ones that I get emails coming from there would be like the Google Educators of Ohio group, Google Trainer Forum. And one of the things that you do have to be careful of how you set those up. One of the things that I can sometimes miss communication from the building level is anything our principal sends out based on, our mailing list ends up in that forums inbox. So sometimes when there's things sent to the whole building, I may not always catch those right away if they're buried amongst several other, emails that come from the different groups that I'm part of.
Yeah. And I tend to do mine a little bit more linearly. I go through one at a time and refile manually.
Ah.
And that takes a little bit, but my mind has always worked in knowing and being aware of everything that comes through.
Well, the one thing about that, although sometimes people might say, well, gosh, with all of these tools for being productive, why would you want to do it manually? But I would say when I look at your role as an assistant principal and the volume of email that you have coming in, at least by working with those manually, it's just a way to force yourself to refresh those things in your mind. And I would guess that throughout the course of a year, you've probably caught some things that maybe otherwise, if you were doing all that with filters or with labels, that you might have missed something.
Yeah, there's always something that I think, as good as AI is, I think my personal email, I filter, right? You've got your divided inboxes, yeah. And I'll catch things that slide through into the wrong folders.
Uh-huh. And that, that is true.
And I'm like, I don't want to miss something.
Yep.
Which is, like you're saying. But when you think about, let's go to a teacher's perspective, if I have Google Classroom set up, and I have an email group maybe for parents or students, I can divide out my inboxes based on my clientele.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And here's the biggest thing, though. So thinking about productivity for teachers, anybody who's used Google Classroom knows that you have an onslaught of emails when you assign things, when due dates are approaching, when assignments come in. Now, during the pandemic, that worked out pretty well for me because I would use my inbox as my to-do list for grading. I could just work through those emails, make sure I get the assignments graded as they came in, and that worked pretty well. But the problem is when you're back in a face-to-face setting, that can be really, really overwhelming because there's just so many emails that go back and forth from Classroom. So my suggestion is, you know, I'm really not a fan of deleting all those or going into Google Classroom and turning them off. But what I think is a really nice way to handle those is if you know how to use the filters and you can create labels. What I did at, toward the tail end in my inbox was I created a label for Google Classroom and then set up a filter by going up to that search bar at the top. And there's a little icon to the right of it for setting up a filter. And I actually set it up where when emails came, anything from classroom.google.com, I had that go right to the label in that folder without deleting it. So at any point, if I want to go and look at those Google Classroom emails, I can go over on the left, go under the label, check them out. But then I'm not just being overwhelmed and overloaded. And so that can actually be used not only for Google Classroom or things that send like automated emails, but I can set that up for important people within the building, however I want to do that. And so, like, for example, the other thing I do is with any communication that comes from principals, I have labels for them on the left side as well. The difference is I don't skip the inbox there. So they come to my inbox, but then they also are put under that label. So I know if I had a principal conversation that I want to go back and reference, I can just check whether it's principal or assistant principal, then I can go right in there and check them out.
Yeah, it's great because now you're kind of meeting that specific need. You're not losing the importance in the inbox. I like, because I've seen others that have it set up, particularly at work. I do like the folder on the side when it automatically filters and you see it's almost its own little notification there when you start to see that number climb. So you know that, yep. Hey, I really need to check out this folder specifically, yep. Especially if you have it prioritized based on needs. So if it's the head principal versus maybe a colleague versus a parent, right? If you're keeping an eye on a specific folder, oh, I got one in that particular inbox, I'm not having to filter through the large mass of emails. I can just jump to those folders.
Yep. And, you know, at the end of the day, what it really is going to come down to for most teachers is that everybody's system is a little bit different. So I could say, all right, here's how I set my inbox up. I'm going to go ahead and set yours up that way. Well, that might not work for everybody else, but I do think for most teachers, there's really something in there. And even just like we talked about with tasks, neither of us had really used that. And as we were preparing for the episode today, you know, both thought, man, this is something I'm going to look at using in the future. There's a lot of tools in there that most of us don't know about. And if you start to find ways that you can put some simple things in there, we can increase that productivity. You know, one last thing to mention when it comes to Gmail is the integration with Google Keep. And Google Keep is a nice little note-taking application that they have. It's not only embedded in Gmail. I mean, it's throughout Google Workspace. You can open it up from the side panel in Google Docs, in Google Calendar. It's all integrated throughout. But you know, using Google Keep along with email, I think can be really helpful because as I'm scrolling through my inbox and I'm trying to get organized on my task list, if I didn't want to necessarily just add it to tasks, so I had some extra notes I wanted to take on it. Right there in the side panel on the right, I can just open up Google Keep and I can take as many notes as I need. And then I can leave that panel open so they're visible. You know, some people who like to do the sticky notes, it's almost like having your own digital sticky note right there on the right-hand side where you can scroll through there. And then if you've got that panel open, as you work throughout all the different apps in Google Workspace, you know, you've got your notes there and you can keep referring back to those.
And one piece I want to add to that is the ability to keep all documents associated with whatever task or note that you're creating.
Yep.
Right. So like a lot of people, well, it's just a side note. And then you can continue. The integration in Google allows you to keep things kind of consolidated for easy reference.
Oh yeah. You can add links, photos. I like even sometimes when I'm doing like a putting together a presentation and I'm searching for image content to put in there, you know, I save them in Google Keep and then I can just work with them from there, you know, as opposed to downloading, you know, physically downloading photos and stuff like that. So you can put, you know, links, documents, put anything you want in there. And that's really a nice place to kind of gather and keep all that stuff. So if you start to integrate and use that with Gmail, you really have an opportunity to kind of, you know, up your game a little bit when it comes to staying on top of things.
Absolutely. A lot of great resources there.
So to finish up, let's just talk about a few things that teachers can use in terms of in the classroom. I mean, we talked a little bit about calendar and Gmail, so that's kind of more on the administrative side, but there's a lot of things out there, and especially, you know, where we're at right now with generative AI, and we've, you know, as far as the tech you can try, we've had introduced a lot of different tools. But the one thing I will say where generative AI is right now, even though it's not to the point where it's revolutionized business and industry and you know, raise profitability for companies, what it really can is really good at, and what it can do to help teachers, it's great at summarizing information. And so if you think about in the teaching field, a lot of time is spent with teachers kind of gathering, creating content and some of those things. So we're going to just talk about a few tools that AI make available so that you can save some time and help in content creation. So let's talk a little bit about rubric generators. So have you, in your time as a math teacher, were creating rubrics a part of what you did?
Oh, absolutely. We always did some type of comprehensive project throughout each 9 weeks. And I just think about, you know, creating the overall outline of what you want, what you expect, the rubric. And, you know, a lot of people were like, well, it's done. But you always revamp. To me, you know, it's a continued practice. And I'm like, man, if just the structure of a rubric, right, maybe just another outlook on what I could be assessing. You know, you're telling me about these AI pieces here, Chad. I think something like that would have been revolutionary back in the day.
Well, yeah, I mean, you think about the amount of to create a good rubric. And just to be able to kind of break things down, figure out, you know, what things are your point values, what you're going to have on there. I mean, that's a very time consuming process. So when you talk about a tool like Magic School, you know, there's a rubric generator. And so what you can do is you start thinking about, all right, I'm going to describe my assignment. I'm going to describe some of the things that I want to evaluate the students on. Give the AI as many details as you can. And when you go ahead and submit that, it doesn't take very long before it's going to, you know, create for you a rubric. Now, the thing about that is we talked in a previous episode about the idea of the 80-20 rule. I mean, it's not going to be a situation where, all right, I just generate this rubric and, you know, boom, I slap it on my assignment and hey, everything is great.
Right.
You know, you're going to have to go back and kind of double check it. But just think about if it does 80% of the work for you, you know, you're saving 80% of the time by going back then and customizing it. And the more information you give it, I mean, I think about like the way Magic School is set up. I mean, I can gear the rubric for a specific grade level. So it's going to set the rubric up differently if I'm making it for sophomores versus like sixth graders. And input my objective so that it knows exactly, you know, what the project is about. What am I trying to get to? And then I describe it. I can even attach a document in the form of a PDF and tell it how many points, any, you know, additional details. It's going to generate for you a pretty impressive rubric and in the end save you quite a bit of time.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. I mean, just from what we've talked about with Magic School in general, the ability to be adaptive based on grade level, based on content, just pulling in enough information to be able to create that. But then, you know, from the teacher perspective, yeah, you're never taking away that need to have you in the room, right? You still have to be the one that's the master of the content, providing the structure and parameters for your project. So I know that that's always been a conversation. Well, you know, if they can do it, whether they could just use the AI piece. Well, the uniqueness and the individuality of a teacher never goes away. We're just talking about ways to kind of alleviate some of the clerical work that would come with it.
Yeah. When I was in Columbus, one of the sessions, as you can imagine, a lot of the sessions were AI based. And one of the sessions that I went to, they talked about AI, and there have been different studies done, and they look at different professions and then give like a, a forecast in the future, what percentage do you think would be that that particular profession would be replaced with technology and AI? And it was interesting to me because teaching was 90% likely that AI would not, you know, replace it. So that 10%, there might be some roles and some things that might be able to be handled by machine learning in the future. But as you said, there's always that need for the human interaction. And I even look at the role that I have. You know, when I think about our staff, we have some staff members who are really, really solid with their technology skills, others who are kind of, you know, average. And then we also have some who need a frequent amount of help. So I don't even feel like, you know, in terms of needing someone to assist with technology, there's always going to, the more detailed and the more, you know, the more it grows, there's still a need to help others learn how to use it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's always a growing piece and an adaptation piece with it.
Now, here's another one that I think is great, too. Let's think to that situation every teacher's been through. Maybe you're the morning of, the night before, and it suddenly becomes apparent that you're going to need a sub the next day and you got to get a sub plan together. So we've all had that situation where we're trying to scramble to put something. Well, maybe we all haven't. There are those teachers who have that awesome subfolder with tons of great lesson plans and, you know, they're ready to go. But then there's the rest of us. Another Magic School AI tool is involving creating video content. What I think is really impressive is you can upload the link for a YouTube video. You can specify how many questions you would like along with age appropriateness and grade level. And you can get some, you know, comprehension questions generated without having to go through the entire video. So let's say that you have some video content that you've used in the past and you've vetted it. Obviously, you wouldn't want to just pick a random video. You wouldn't know what was in there. But if you've vetted a video or you know it's from a trusted source, you can save some time of having to watch the entire video, pick out the questions. And again, if it's content you know, you can take the questions that are generated and even edit and add your own.
I think that's pretty cool. You know, I think of like Edpuzzle, how this is comparative. But Edpuzzle does rely on you to watch, create. And I've even had some where some people are like, well, there's a bunch that are already created in the library. Yeah, but the problem with that is you're relying on somebody else versus AI technology that analyzes specifics of it. And sometimes I get human error and some incorrectness versus if I just have one that looks for more just recall and basic understanding, I can kind of go with the, you know, run with it there.
Yeah. My biggest complaint with the Edpuzzle is that there were always either way too many questions.
Yep.
And that's, to me, I think that's a whole Edpuzzle. That could be a whole nother discussion, but that's one of the biggest mistakes. Like you think about the user experience. If a kid is stopping every 15 seconds to answer a question, I mean, that's not even watching a video really. So
they're just answering questions.
Right there. And that, so the video is all chopped up. The other thing too, is a lot of those questions I found either the way that they were worded or just in a lot of cases, not very much causing kids to think on a deeper level. They were a lot of like, identification and recall type questions. So yeah. And you know, these tools, Edpuzzle, they have their own AI features yep. now being built in as well. But I just really like the idea of being able to take a video and literally in under a minute, generate, you know, a series of comprehension questions. And if you've got good video content, have an activity and a pinch that would be really easy to use.
Yeah, I think, I think it's a great idea, especially, you know, not even a sub plan as we're coming into testing season. Right. And I'm thinking at the high school level, you want to review, you want to make sure students have a good opportunity to kind of recap some of this content. We used to do kind of like catch up lessons for students, but we would create the videos and then share them out. But no kid wants to sit there and watch me talk for another 10 minutes. But this could be something a little bit more engaging that could just be a 5-minute review over this topic.
Yep.
With a couple quick questions. Hey, how'd you do? Right? They can start to assess themselves, man. When you start talking about that self-assessment, you can start layering those pieces in and then allow students to take that outside of the classroom. And your weight that you have to carry is much lighter because you can rely on AI.
Yeah. Speaking of review, so another feature that I really like that's a huge time saver, you think about how a lot of times what we do as teachers, we take a difficult reading assignment and a difficult text and we basically paraphrase or cut it down so it's appropriate for our students depending on their level. So one of the things that Magic School can do, there's a text summary feature where I can take PDFs or copied text and tell, you know, the AI generator, like, okay, how from this text, how long do I want my summary to be? Do I want it to be 5 paragraphs, 4 paragraphs? What reading level do I want it to be at? So I was thinking about this in terms of a science class. You know, I could have, I think it's almost like creating your own cliff notes from the book. You know, you could take your sections from your textbook and basically create your own summaries, which I think is really pretty amazing. Wow. And then create a library in your Google Classroom. And think about normally to do that, let's say that I did that on my own, going back just maybe 5 or 6 years ago, took my textbook and then wrote my own 2 to 3 paragraph summaries. Number one, the content, probably the quality wouldn't be great because I wouldn't have the time to polish and you know, go back and rework those for a final draft. But just the time to read and write all of that would really be a lot. And in this case, if I built some of this as I was working through the year, it would really only take me under, you know, 5 minutes just to create a summary based on like a key piece of text. And I could really build a library almost of my own cliff notes, which and then make those available digitally to the students. So I think that's really a phenomenal tool and a major productivity advance that would not be possible without, you know, some of these tools that are becoming available.
Oh, I think that's wonderful when you talk about creating your own Cliff Note library for reference. And just as a like kind of side note there, if you're supporting EL students,
you can
translate those where they're not reading comprehensive textbooks, they're reading synopses that allow them to just gain the big picture.
Oh, yeah. And even think about like the other side of that. Not only could they be in their native language, but as you're trying to help with their journey in learning English, having them read the summaries in English as opposed to reading the entire text, and then you even get into the world of like IEP students who struggle with reading, and you'd want them to get in a content based class, not a reading class, where you want them to focus more on the content. It's an easy way to cut it down. So really a great time saver there. And then one last thing just to think about a little bit, the idea of providing writing feedback. You know, anybody who's taught language arts, I've often said this, that I only taught language arts for a couple years at the middle school level and was not very proficient at it. But, and when I say that, not very proficient, not about relating to the kids, developing activities, but just the things for a seasoned, experienced language arts teacher and the things that they do in teaching reading and writing, that's not something you can master in a couple of years. The idea of writing, anybody will tell you, that is a very time-consuming task to go through student writing and provide really, really detailed feedback. But with some of these tools coming out, like mentioned in previous episodes, Class Companion being one of them, giving students an opportunity to write and then getting instant feedback from AI, I really view that as a tool that has the opportunity to change the way students write. Because from what I see currently, there is not much of a writing process. Students are task oriented. They look at writing as, okay, I've been given this task. Okay, I wrote about it. I'm done.
Yep.
And that's not what teachers are trying to, teachers of writing are trying to get the kids to think about iterating their work, improving it, thinking about what they wrote to get to a final product that's a polished piece of work. Well, the problem is when you go through the process of student writes it, teacher takes it home, gives their feedback, returns it a couple of days later, the student is really out of that mindset of what they were writing about, and it takes a lot to get back into it. So the idea that a student can write and get immediate feedback from AI, and again, this doesn't mean that the AI replaces the teacher, but what it really does is it provides instant feedback that benefits the student. The teacher is still in the room and still in the same boat of being only able to help one student at a time, but now the other students are getting feedback and getting help while the teacher is working one-on-one with an individual. I used to have a lot of trouble with middle school kids because they're not really very good at waiting for your help. And so if 7 people need help at the same time, I was like running around trying to get to all of them at once. And that's just not very effective.
Yeah, I think it's great when students can kind of take the initiative to be self-reflective, which then feeds even more into that writing process. And like you said, if they're waiting on the teacher, you just talk about taking that layer off the teacher where they can be more effective in providing holistic support, reviewing final products, and that being where most of their energy is spent on giving adequate feedback on a final product rather than sequential feedback on checkpoints, right? Not like teachers won't. Like one of our English teachers here, she has started using AI for this. She's like, it's been great. And then I can add a little bit, but I'm not having to take the full amount of time that I would to sit there and write, you know, a strong amount of feedback just so they can go polish
better,
it.
Better productivity. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. So we have one here that I've been working with, and I know Chad, you actually had pulled her in and kind of showed her what to do. She has spoke highly of this process.
Yeah, I think it's great because I look at it this way. You know, some people might say, well, wait a minute, isn't that replacing the job that you do? I look at it like having more assistant coaches, you know, it's in a sports setting. So, you know, you're not, it's just like the same situation. You don't have one coach can't coach an entire football team or basketball team. They need assistance to kind of like, you know, give more targeted feedback. Same situation here in terms of, you know, using the AI where one teacher can only be with one, you know, a single student at a time if they're trying to give really deep feedback. So I think that's great.
And then kids aren't limited by submissions. So we've had some kids that are submitted twice and then others that'll submit it seven times and they can continue getting the feedback every time.
You can set the number of iterations too, which I think is great. So if you want to, you know, one of the problems with if you give them too many times, they may give you low quality in the beginning, trying to just like almost the kind of idea of throwing things at the wall to see if something sticks. But if you start to get to the point where, hey, maybe I'm going to give you four times. And then if you're more in an evaluative phase, maybe you only give them two times. So you can really use that to kind of like hone in what your objective is. And the other thing I like too, is that there is a built-in feature and you would have to get the students to a little higher level to use this, but there's a place where they can dispute the AI feedback. So let's say that they've written something, they think it's a really well-written piece of work that has like a point that they think really does a good job of conveying their thoughts and the AI made some suggestions. They can actually dispute it and then discuss with the teacher why they thought the AI didn't give them the feedback that they were in, maybe deserved or maybe that it missed the point. And to me, that's a huge win because now the student's thinking about what they wrote and debating why, you know, based on feedback, why they think it's better than maybe what they received. And that's really what you want in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of great resources here.
So the better handle that you have on the tools in your technology toolbox, the more time you can save and devote to teaching. And hey, in the end, maybe even have a little bit more time to relax.
Absolutely. But one of those things that we talked about at the beginning, it's got to be something that you just got to try, right? You won't know until you at least pick it up and try it.
You got to try it. And then the more you use it, the more proficient you'll become. And once you start to develop those skills, then it becomes second nature.
Absolutely.
So we hope you've gained some ideas from this episode. And by using some of these things, you'll up your productivity and become a little bit more organized. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please remember to subscribe, rate, and write us a review.
You can find all episodes of Teaching in Tech with Alan and Chad on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.